Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Freeman, who is a leading authority on the production, management, and delivery of energy to large populations. He has had the ear of federal officials since the days of JFK and helped bring about the Environmental Protection Agency under President Nixon. He headed the Tennessee Valley Authority under Jimmy Carter, headed the New York Power Authority and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and was the state energy czar responsible for rescuing California from the predations of Enron and Company. He's the author of Winning Our Energy Independence and Energy Insider Shows How. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Freeman.
Well, I'm glad to be with you again.
And we introduced you there with You Light Up Our Life. You've been lighting up a lot of people's lives for decades.
Well, I had the great privilege of having the lights stay on in Los Angeles when they dimmed throughout the rest of the state and back during the energy crisis. And that was probably my best days as a utility executive. I mean, we actually got some positive press then. Other than people just expect the lights to stay on, and they get very angry if you raise the rates or if there's ever a blackout. So, but that's just the way it goes with the turf. But this blackout issue is not something to be laughed at. It should be a growing concern, because we are now in the age of climate change, and that's a fundamentally different situation than we've lived through the last 100 years.
I want to get to that, David Freeman, but just to the 33-minute power outage in the third quarter on Sunday, Super Bowl, seen all around the world, a record number of people saw it. It struck me at the time that this is a bit embarrassing for the entire country. This is sort of third world that's happening here, and you know, we have all this paranoia about terrorism, etc. Obviously, it was apparently quickly determined by the police and the other authorities that this was a power issue, not a public safety terrorism issue. But just in general, do you think that this is a national embarrassment, and it should make people both realize how much they're dependent upon electricity, and two, how vulnerable the grid is?
Well, it was just the revenge of the utility, you know. People have been bashing the utilities. Well, we just wanted to show people that we could wipe out the Super Bowl. I mean, that we're pretty, I'm only half-jesting, but I mean, the plain truth of the matter is a dramatic example of how utterly and completely dependent our whole economy is on reliable electricity. And I think it was healthy that we had probably the largest number of viewers that you can get on television any one time to see that the lights can go out, and remind them, because we've had this terrible catastrophe on the East Coast here where people were without power for weeks. And I think the public is, except for those poor folks that still don't have power back, everybody else has forgotten about it. And this is our fundamental problem. Our attention span is about like as long as a bolt of lightning. And this is a problem that if we don't fix, it's just going to happen again and again and again, because we're now in an era where the storms are stronger, more frequent, and more violent, and we have a grid that was built over a 100-year period that's going to be blown down more often.
So in terms of what happened at the Super Bowl, the company involved is Entergy, which is the local electric company. And apparently the power outage was a result of a problem in one of the two feeder lines that power the stadium from an external substation. Is that a familiar?
We have a 100-year-old industry. I mean, the electric grid is kind of in about maybe somewhat better shape, but about the same shape as the rest of our infrastructure. And and this was a pretty sizable load, all the lights on at one time, and they just hadn't done the maintenance, the repair work. They hadn't upgraded the system to carry the load. I mean, I remember the first big blackout. I was at the Federal Power Commission in 1963, I think, and it was caused by the fact that no one had adjusted the relays on the lines going north of Niagara, and it hit a certain point, and just as a protection measure, so transmission line cut off, and the power turned around and surged all through New York and New England and knocked out all the power plants. Well, we've done a lot to improve things since then, but it's the same old phenomenon that if you don't keep the system up, you're going to have blackouts. Now, I know this sounds counterintuitive and almost revolutionary, but electric rates are too low in America. They are regulated rather well by public utility commissions, and the margin of profit the utilities make is quite reasonable and well regulated. The oil companies have taken this to the cleaners, and they've made all the money. They've used all these profits in part to figure out how to dig deeper, drill deeper, and go faraway places. And now we've got more and more oil and gas to contaminate the air and put carbon up there. And yet the solar power and the wind power that would be economic today if electric power prices were 10 or 15% higher are not going forward at the pace that they need to. So, electric power is now the real lifeblood of not only our entire economy, but every home has computers and things. Every home is a business in a sense now. And when the lights go out, the economy in that place goes down to zero and stays zero. And if we just did the economics, it would certainly be a good investment to provide backup power sources, hopefully renewable, for everyone. That doesn't mean we won't continue to use the system we have, but when it breaks down, there ought to be a backup for everybody, not just the rich people that go out and buy generators for themselves, and not just the office buildings that have backups, but I mean everybody. And we need to start thinking those terms, and that means we need to pay a bit more for electricity, because it'll be cost-effective to do so.
Again, I'm speaking with David Freeman, who is a leading authority on the production, management, and delivery of energy to large populations. He has had the ear of federal officials since the days of JFK and helped bring about the Environmental Protection Agency under President Nixon. He headed the Tennessee Valley Authority under President Jimmy Carter, headed the New York Power Authority and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and was the state energy czar responsible for rescuing California from the predations of Enron and Company. He's the author of Winning Our Energy Independence and Energy Insider Shows How. So you've pointed out the aging grid will be subject to more and more stress from future in the future from extreme weather caused by global warming. And the irony is that the global warming is in turn caused to a great extent by the use of coal to generate electricity, particularly in China. Where do we stand with eliminating that? Because that's a stationary source that we...
Well, let me tell you where we stand. Until we start showing some leadership in America, we don't have anything to say to the Chinese. I mean, all the carbon that's up there now was put up there, almost all of it was put up there by America and Europe. And the Chinese are just beginning their development. We've been polluting up there for the last 30 or 40 years. So until America starts phasing out coal and fossil fuels in a big way, I just don't think the Chinese are going to pay any attention to us.
So what can be done then in terms of what I'm getting from you, David Freeman, is that if you have these big grids like the one you just described that went out in New York in the 60s, the alternative surely would be to decentralize power, would it not?
I think at this stage of the game, we can just supplement the grid by building kind of local mini grids. I mean, just like an office building. An office building has a generator that sits there and does nothing, you know, 90% of the time. But if there's a power shortage, they burn diesel oil and keep the lights on. Well, the generator could burn hydrogen, and the hydrogen could be made from solar power. But we can provide those kind of backups on a neighborhood basis and throughout the country, because when the lights go out, the damage is so great and the suffering is so intense, and it's going to happen so much more often in the future that we've got to deal with it. That would just mean paying a little bit more for electricity, but it would be more than worth it. I mean, if you just count up how much money the cost of these blackouts are and how much hardship they are, it's an easy decision to make on a financial basis.
Now, do this technology, we know certainly solar exists, and big companies have plenty of roof spaces, and one of the ways to get around the global warming, I've been told by scientists, is that if everybody painted their roof white in the world, that would do a lot to reflect the sun back, because the polar ice caps have done that.
Conservation has got to be a part of it, but you need some energy. I mean, you can't conserve down to zero, because it takes something to keep warm in the winter and to run the air conditioner. So it's got to be made. Electricity has to be made out of solar, wind, and with storage to back it up. But a generator can burn hydrogen just as easily as it burns diesel. And there's a lot of, and we know how to separate the hydrogen from the water. We do it with a machine called an electrolysis machine that's 90-some-odd% efficient, and we can use the solar power. In effect, we would store the solar power in the form of hydrogen and use it only when it's needed. So even if it were a bit more expensive, it wouldn't matter, because the lights will stay on most of the time. But this backup, if it's economic, you know, for hospitals and office buildings, then many grids in the neighborhood could be equally cost-effective. It's just a change of mindset. We have to realize that the grid is going to be a lot more vulnerable to outages from storms, and especially here on the East Coast, but all over the country. I mean, we're in a new era, and we've got to start adjusting to it, or we will pay a heavy price. I mean, I don't know how many episodes like what we faced a few months ago we can tolerate in this country.
Well, David Freeman, of course, the idea that we should spend money on alternatives and raise electric rates to do so is not certainly something politicians seem to have the the courage to put forth.
But they can't seem to decide the time of day, so let's just put them aside.
Right. But meanwhile, enormous resources and money are going into nuclear power, for example. And we have an example down here south of us at San Onofre, north of San Diego.
It's pretty clear that we need to retire those aging nuclear plants before they kill us. They're Fukushima-type designs, and many of them are near earthquake faults. There's radioactive trash that's piled up for 30 years, and they're not really that cost-effective anymore. But we have the technology to replace them. We just haven't made the decision to do so. I mean, at the San Onofre plant, we've gotten a major assist in shutting the plant down from the engineers at the Edison Company who really badly screwed up the design of new steam generators to the point where they're not functioning, even though they're only 2 years or 1 year old. And that plant needs to be replaced by the solar and wind and storage that's coming online. I mean, actually, the electric power loads are not growing hardly at all now, and until we get electric cars in mass quantities, they're probably not going to grow. But between efficiency and load management and bringing on the solar and wind and storage, we can replace the nuclear plants over a period of several years. But we got to start right now before we have a Fukushima-type accident. And I can tell you that we need to start recognizing that there's all this radioactive trash that's piled up for 30 years. It's sitting there, most of it in swimming pools, and if they lose the water, and there's no containment, so they're out there in the open. If they lose the water, you have a radioactive fire. It's the equivalent of a meltdown. And at least let's put those spent fuels into dry concrete casts for the time being, because there's no other answer. But we need to exercise birth control. We need to stop making stuff that's going to be radioactive for thousands of years, and we don't know where to put it. Now, you know, the climate change challenge is no greater than the threat of atomic power, and there is no such thing as a peaceful atom. And the plain truth of the matter is it's time to end the love affair with nuclear power, which is morphed into a religion for certain people. Because, as a matter of fact, on a cost basis, even natural gas, which is poison, also is cheaper than nuclear power. So if you're going to have poison anyhow, you might as well have the cheapest. But we shouldn't have either one of them. The future ought to be all solar, wind, with storage to make it available around the clock. We're doing it in California, and we're going to be at 33% by 2020. And the governor already mentioned going to 40%. I think California is leading the way, frankly, perhaps in the whole world. But the rest of the world needs to join them, and we need to continue on a march to 100% renewable. I have a very simple law that I think ought to be passed. We ought to just pass a law that's saying that these polluters ought to reduce greenhouse gas pollution 3% a year. And to the extent that they fail to make that goal, there'll be a very heavy tax on the amount by which they failed to meet the goal, and that money could not be passed on the consumer. It has to be absorbed by the stockholder. If we could pass such a law, we would be on the road to a carbon-free, a nuclear-free energy supply where our grandchildren might be able to live a much happier life than otherwise.
Well, just in closing, David Freeman, surely it would take, since the technology is old and we spend, we're willing to throw good money after bad with nuclear power, but we don't appear to be willing to build a sufficiently big solar plant that would power a whole city to show that it, that this technology that's been around forever can actually work if you scale it up.
Well, we're actually doing a little better than that in California. They're building solar plants of several hundred megawatts now. The revolution is quietly underway. It just needs to, that flame needs to be fanned, and people need to know more about it and demand it. But frankly, the price of solar power has gone down like a rock in recent years. And if you could fund these solar projects with just 2% loans, 100% debt, it would be very economical. So what we really need to make the solar and wind revolution happen is a green bank, take a page out of the book of the REA, and loan a money at 2% interest. These projects are just like dams. They're all capital. Once they're paid for, the operating costs are next to nothing. So we can have cheaper power in the future. And it see, the current plants are financed by private capital that's making a lot of money, and the cost of the capital averages around 10%. If you can build a plant with 2% money, you have just knocked the hell out of the cost. And we're in the revolution then is underway. We know what we need to do. We just don't have the knowledge at the grassroots level, and we don't have that old-time religion we had in the 70s when we created EPA and when Richard Nixon sounded like a member of the Sierra Club. But, you know, Barack has now said that he wants to do something. It's up to the people to make him do it.
Well, David Freeman, I thank you so much for joining us.
Pleased to be here. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with David Freeman, who is a leading authority on the production, management, and delivery of energy to large populations. He has had the ear of federal officials since the days of JFK and helped bring about the Environmental Protection Agency under Nixon. He headed the Tennessee Valley Authority under Jimmy Carter, headed the New York Power Authority and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and was a state energy czar responsible for rescuing California from the predations of Enron and Company. He's the author of Winning Our Energy Independence and Energy Insider Shows How. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about my jihad. You can't be